14. Midway. At the midpoint of our voyage, Mars was a bright yellow beacon in front of us. Earth, a bright blue star, behind. It was an occasion to party, and the Mars Corporation had actually allotted a few kilograms mass for a large plastic bottle of Remy Martin cognac for that purpose. Since several of the adults didn't drink, it proved enough to get the rest of them about as intoxicated as they wanted to be, or perhaps a little more, like me. We joked about the drinking age between planets, and my parents shrugged. Since there was no other alcohol aboard ship, I wasn't likely to become a drunkard, which doesn't mean I couldn't get into trouble. Paul had only one drink, mixed with water. The curse of being captain, he said wryly. But I had three before my parents went to bed, and maybe two afterward. It lowered my inhibitions, but I suppose I wanted them lowered. The drinks were served in the galley, where there was gravity to keep the booze in the glasses, but some of us moved into the zero-G area to dance. Pretty strange, dancing without a floor. It was all kind of freestyle and rambunctious. We took turns asking the ship for music. A lot of it was old, jazz and ska and waterbug, or ancient, like waltzes and rock, but there was plenty of city and sag. Paul and I danced for a while, usually with each other, and I guess I started feeling glamorous, or at least sexy, dominating the captain's attentions. Not that there was much unmarried competition. The zero-G room goes to nightlight from midnight till 6, conserving power and giving people a reasonably private, or at least anonymous, place to have sex, or romance, but I don't think much of that was going on. There was no real privacy in the sleeping quarters, just a thin partition, which didn't prevent some people from embarrassing the rest of us. But most couples waited and met at one dark end or the other of the zero-G room. At midnight, the only others in the zero-G room were the Manchesters, who left us alone after a bit of obvious yawning and stretching. Afterward, we agreed that we both had been sort of time bombs ticking, waiting for the midnight hour. If I hadn't wanted to be seduced, I could have left while the lights were still on. But there was something desperate going on inside me that wasn't just sexual desire or curiosity. Our whispered conversation had gotten around to virginity and my sort of in-between status, which I'd never told anyone about. But the booze loosened my tongue. When I was 13, I was fooling around with a boy who had borrowed his sister's vibrator, and in the course of investigating how to use it, he was a little clumsy and popped me. It wasn't very painful, but it was the end of that relationship, right at the playing doctor stage. He didn't go to my school, so I didn't know whether any of the other boys knew about it, but I imagined they could all tell at a glance that I wasn't a virgin anymore. After about a year or so, I realized that I still actually was. I was unpopular and unattractive, or at least felt like it. Skipped a grade, but then got it back after my parents took me out of school for a year to go overseas. They worked in London and Madrid, and I went back and forth, learning about enough Spanish to order a Coke in a restaurant. From not speaking Spanish, it only took a few minutes for the conversation to get about to the difficulties of having sex in space, with lack of privacy being only one of several problems, with the conservation of momentum and angular momentum high on the list. Difficult to describe, so I asked him to demonstrate, with our clothes on, of course. That stage didn't last too long. We explored another problem, that of getting at least partially undressed while both of you had to hold on to a handle or go spinning apart. We did manage to get our bottoms mostly removed. He looked kind of large, if smaller than my friend's sister's vibrator, but he was slow and gentle. As soon as he got it all the way in, he ejaculated. But we stayed together, and he recovered in a few minutes and did it again. I'd been prepared for an ordeal, but in fact, it was all pretty exciting and fun. I kept losing my grip, and he'd swim after me, while I groped for one of the handles. We wound up floating in midair, though, holding each other's shoulders, rotating slowly, and then not slowly. I didn't really have an orgasm until later, in the shower, but it was still overwhelming. Floating in space with Paul inside me, and me inside his arms. It took me a long time to fall asleep that night, and I woke up with the feeling still fresh. His face in the twilight, eyes closed, concentrating and then losing control, and me, not a virgin anymore, not even technically. It was several days before we could find the privacy to talk about it. We were both in the galley for the last breakfast shift, and I killed some time cleaning up the microwave and prep area until the last people left. He said it quickly, almost sotto voce.
"Carmen, I'm sorry I took advantage of you."
"You didn't. I loved it."
"But you were drinking, and I really wasn't."
"Just to get up the courage." "Not strictly true. I'm sure I would have had a couple no matter who was at the party."
"Don't feel guilty."
He was still sitting down. I leaned over and hugged him from behind. "Really, don't. You made me so happy." I could tell he was trying not to squirm.
"Made me happy, too," he said in an unhappy voice.
I sat down across from him.
"What?
What is it? Age difference?"
"No. That's part of it, but no."
He leaned back.
"It's my being pilot, which is to say, captain."
He visibly struggled, trying to find words.
"I want to show you how I feel, but I can't. I can't court you. I can't treat you differently from anybody else."
"Of course not. I wouldn't expect,
but I want to. That night meant as much to me, maybe more. And I want to treat you like a lover. I can't even wink at you, not really, let alone hold your hand or..."
"Or do it again," I realized. "Even if we manufactured an opportunity. Do you really think it's a secret? The Manchesters pretty obviously left to give us some privacy."
"You haven't told anybody?"
"No. Not in so many words. But Elspeth and Kaime gave me big grins that were pretty clear."
"That's important. The ship runs on rumor as much as hydrogen. People will whisper. They'll know. But as long as you and I keep it private, my authority isn't compromised."
His authority. And a devilish part of me wanted to tell everybody. "I'm a real woman. I'm fucking the captain." "I can see that." Somebody was coming down the ladder. He stood up. It was my mother, coffee cup in hand.
"Oh, hello, Paul."
Amazing how much she could communicate with two words.
"Morning, Laura. See you later, Carmen."
He went up the ladder as soon as she let go. She watched his retreating ass with a little smile. Then she got a spoonful of coffee and poured hot water on it.
"I was younger than you," she said.
17. And no, it wasn't your father.
"You didn't meet until graduate school," I said inanely.
"He's 11 years older?"
"More like 10. He was born in February."
She put some sugar in the coffee. Not normal for her.
"Don't get too attached to him. He has a life on Mars, and he'll have to stay there."
"I might want to stay there, too." Even as I said the words, I couldn't believe they'd come out of my mouth.
"We all have the option, of course."
She touched my shoulder. "He's a nice man. Don't forget, there are a billion of them back on Earth." She capped the coffee and swung up the ladder, back to her research station, without saying any motherly things like, "Don't let him hurt you," or "Don't let your father know," proving life is not a soap. Of course Dad would know, along with everybody else. If the pilot had fucked any other innocent young thing, I suppose I would know by breakfast. I didn't feel particularly young or innocent. If everyone knows, why not keep doing it? It wasn't as if I could get pregnant. With delays, I wouldn't start ovulating until after we'd landed on Mars, as he well knew. Even mighty space pilot sperm wouldn't live that long. After we reached the halfway mark, all of us young ones met our volunteer Mars mentors. People who weren't teachers or parents, but wanted to help us with our transition to their world. My guy was Oz, Dr. Oswald Penninger, a life scientist like Mother. He had a big smile and a salt and pepper beard. Conversation was awkward, with an 8-minute delay between, "How are you?" and, "Fine." But we got used to it. It was kind of like really slow instant messaging. You ask a question, and then do something else for a while, and he answers, and then does something else for a while. We didn't normally use virtual, unless there was something to show. He was like everybody's favorite uncle, acknowledging the difference in our ages, but then treating me like an equal who didn't know quite as much. I grew to like him better than most of the people on board, which I suppose was predictable. He was 63, an African-American from Georgia, exobiologist, and artist. They didn't have paper for drawing, of course, but he did beautifully intricate work on screen that galleries in Atlanta and Oslo printed and sold. Should an artist's pictures match his personality? Oz was a jolly, plump man, given to sly wordplay and funny stories. But his art was dark and disturbing. He'd studied art in Norway for 2 years, and said his stuff was positively cheerful compared to the other people's in his studio. I'd have to see that to believe it. He zapped me the software that he uses for drawing, but I'd never had much talent in that direction. He said he'll show me some tricks when we meet in person. Meanwhile, I've downloaded a beginner's text on cartooning, and will try to learn enough to surprise him. Funny to have a friend you've never touched or actually seen. I wonder whether we'll like each other in person.